You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Thanks to advancements in veterinary medicine, nutrition, and general care, the average age of America's pet population is greater than ever. But just as with the aging of their owners, senior pets are more prone to aches, pains, challenges, and diseases. It's important to remember that aging is a process and not a disease. My guest today is Dr. Diane Levitan. She is a board-certified veterinary internal medicine specialist. Dr. Levitan assists her aging patients in living the best quality of life for as long as possible. She'll discuss how therapies such as hyperbaric oxygen therapy, gamma ray therapy, radioactive isotope treatments, and ultrasounds can diagnose and help save the lives of our silver-whiskered pets. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
There's nothing like a shaggy dog, baby. They're shagadelic. And this is the place to find out how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Oh, yeah. So stop by our pad every week and get switched on, baby. Switched on to the show that's all about attitude. Oh, behave. With your groovy host, pet edutainer Arden Moore. Yeah, baby, yeah. Every week on demand on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Levitan, thanks so much for being with us today. So many of us have these patients, have the pets that are getting older. And once they get older, boy, they really have wormed their ways into our heart. We want to keep them around forever and ever.
We certainly do. But it is so hard, you know, and my great-grandmother always used to say, as we get older, our parts wear out. And we don't want to call old age a disease, but there is something real about the aging process that we, unfortunately, as we look in the mirror and we get older, we see that's an inevitable thing. So, but there are luckily a lot of things we can do about it.
So, Dr. Levitan, maybe we should start off with, what age is a pet considered old?
That's a very important question to answer for this now, isn't it? Now, old is relative. So, I don't feel old, but my kids will call me old. But we
and
can
I
always
definitely
tell
don't feel old either. Yes, I know.
But we don't. You know, we know how we feel, but we don't really know how our pets feel. So we sort of put numbers on them. And the smaller a dog is, they tend to live longer. So old age for them is a little bit older. So if a dog is less than about 20 pounds, we would say that they're old at the age of between, I would say once they get to about 9 years old, we consider them old. And maybe a medium-sized dog between 20 and 50 pounds, maybe when they're about the same age or maybe a little younger. Larger dogs, though, they tend to live shorter lives, unfortunately. Doesn't mean we love them any less, but they definitely aren't around as long. And I guess their parts just do wear out sooner. But their old age, they sort of hit old age when they're about 7, I would say, for a dog that's between 50 and 90 pounds. And those giant dogs that really steal our hearts, they get old even more quickly, or age more quickly, we should say. And so they show signs of aging around 6 years old. And cats, they tend to be, some cats can live about 24 years. That's probably the longest one I've heard. Have you heard of living longer than that?
I think the longest one I've ever heard of was a kitty named Mama, and I don't know where exactly she lived, but something to the age of 24, 26. But yes, you know, it seems like those little feisty creatures, they last forever, and the nasty little bitey ones, they definitely last forever.
Yes, the meanest ones live forever, don't they? But those older cats, we usually call cats elderly after 10 years old, and maybe sometimes maybe even after 12. We're always reluctant to call our pets old, aren't we?
Yes, because they are our babies and they will always be our babies. And I think one of the things that's important is that, you know, most veterinarians will probably say, all right, let's take an age. So maybe 7. And since one of our years is about 7 dog and cat years, I personally don't think 49 is all that old, but you have to start counting somewhere, just like you and I. You know, you start getting the mammograms and the colonoscopies and all those other fun things to say, yes, you are now there. So as these pets get older, what are some of the things that someone such as yourself, a board-certified internal medicine specialist, does to try to make sure that these kids are living the good life for as long as possible?
Well, I'm so happy you're doing this show, because the most important thing is really to educate pet owners on what to look for. You know, how do we know if our pet is not feeling well, or if, you know, we don't want to chalk things up to old age. So luckily, through education like this wonderful show, we can teach people what to look for and how to discover things that are bothering their aging pets. So when an older animal comes in to me for an examination, there may be some different questions that I'll really ask to try to get a feeling for what's going on and try to help the pet owner understand why their pet may be behaving a certain way. And many times in these elderly dogs, it has to do with age-related changes. So things that we might look for more seriously or closely and even take more seriously are changes in the heart, perhaps changes in their eyes. Unfortunately, cancer is more prevalent in older animals. That's the price, I guess, for living longer in some of them. We'll feel their skin and every little lump and bump, because not every lump and bump is bad, but we know as they get older, they do develop more lumps and bumps. We'll definitely check their teeth. Ask a lot of questions about history. How's he doing on his walks? Is he getting tired? Are you attributing that to just being old? Because that's not good enough. We need to look into why your pet may be getting tired. And if they're drinking more or having urination problems in the house, or maybe even not being able to find the door the way they used to. So a lot of different kinds of questions that will address the different problems we see as pets get older.
Well, you were talking about eyes a moment ago, and I was the good person. I went in and I had my yearly eye check, and my ophthalmologist said, oh, I see some opacity changes going on in your lens. You know, it's a little bit of lenticular sclerosis, and that's a term that I throw out, you know, pretty common with my clients, and usually they'll come in and they'll see the little grain of the lens, and it's this overall kind of milk white color, and go, oh, lenticular sclerosis, lens is getting older, and I will usually say, you know, it doesn't lead to blindness, it doesn't lead to cataracts. So I didn't feel badly when my ophthalmologist said that to me, other than, thanks, I'm getting old. But then I said, so it doesn't lead to cataracts. He goes, oh no, it's a form of cataracts. So correct me if I'm wrong, doctor, with all the extra initials after your name. Lenticular sclerosis, does it lead to cataracts and blindness in dogs and cats?
So that's a really good question. And you know what's really funny is usually it's the other way around. I'll hear something that happens in pets that we are always familiar happens in people, and people are the ones that are surprised. Now, when you tell me you had lenticular sclerosis, I'm surprised because I didn't know people could get it.
Neither did I.
So it's lenticular sclerosis or nuclear sclerosis is a very fancy word for a clouding of the lens of the eye. And actually what happens is clouding eyes are very common findings in old dogs, but there's not just one cause for that. And so it's important that you saw your ophthalmologist and that the animal see their veterinarian. But the lens of the eye is a solid disc that's right in the center of the eye, right behind the colored part of our eye or the iris. And normally you don't see it at all because it's entirely transparent. It's like glass. When light travels into the eye through the pupil, which is, you know, really just a hole there in the middle of that pigmented tissue, it goes through the lens, which you don't see, if your lens is clear, that is, and into the back of the eye so that your eye can process the picture that you're seeing. So the lens will change shape and do a lot of things over time, so it's really important that it's clear. But as dogs age, the cells inside the lens change also, and they age, and sometimes there's irreversible age changes. So new layers can form on the lens, and new layers are constantly being created, but over time, they aren't able to reproduce as clearly over time. So, and also the lens gets harder over time. So as the pets age, their lens becomes harder, and then it becomes less transparent. We don't consider it a cataract in animals because it's a different kind of a process. This process of nuclear sclerosis or lenticular sclerosis is gradual and really doesn't cause vision problems unless it's very, very advanced. But cataracts are a little different because they are much more permanent change from a different reason, not just from cellular aging. But they're not normal structures. It's not a normal type of change like nuclear sclerosis.
It's almost like a fracture line in the lens, and it's really very dense, and a dog can't see that, where typically they can see through the lens. I'll tell people it's kind of like doggy presbyopia. They need cheater glasses to read.
It's true. And so, but cataracts actually are damage of the lens. So the lens is no longer transparent and gets cloudy all through it because of damage to the structure of the lens. So we typically consider them two different things in veterinary medicine.
And alas, with people, it's not the same. So my ophthalmologist said, lucky me, in a few years, who knows how many that is, I will have the joy of cataract surgery, but they have it down to such a science, and they can do the same thing with dogs and cats, that I'm not terribly worried about it.
You know what's really interesting also is that pets don't live as long as we do. So you can imagine that changes in the pet's eye might happen a little earlier that are less likely to become cataracts. So maybe it's a similar process, and if our dogs live longer, maybe they would turn into a form of cataract like we would get. Who knows?
We'll have to do an experiment. You had talked about lumps and bumps, and that seems to be oh so common. Now, yes, if you have that bump that's been there for years, or sometimes you get that kind of overweight pet, and the owner will find a bump on one side and say, you know, look at the other side. You know that what you're feeling there? It's kind of like a love handle, because if you go to the opposite side of the body, it has a bump there, and the body usually is not talented enough to have cancer on both sides in the same place. What is
right.
your usual recommendation when somebody sees a lump or bump, especially if it's come up quickly?
You know, lumps or bumps always worry me in older pets because, you know, you just don't always know. And you're always hoping, oh, it's just a fatty tumor or something. But you're right. You mentioned one of the most important things is it symmetrical? So if we find a lump on one side, we kind of hope to find the exact same thing on the other side because God was very clever and made animals and people symmetrical for the most part. Except for me, you know, one of my eyebrows is a little bit different. But, you know, we won't go there. But silly. But you're right. It's important to just really get a good feel. And you really can't always tell just by feeling. So if you're concerned, I would definitely have your veterinarian do a very simple test called a needle aspirate. Because all that does is use a little tiny needle. It doesn't even hurt them. Take some cells out, and they can send it to the laboratory, and they can make you feel a heck of a lot better if you found out it was only fat that they were feeling instead of, God forbid, something that might change into something more significant. But the other most important thing you mentioned is quick changes. So if something changes rapidly, we need to be much more concerned. And fatty tumors seem to sometimes crop up overnight. It never hurts to get it checked out. But the more quickly something comes up or the more different it looks from something else on the body, very important to get it checked out.
And if you have one of the breeds that seems to be very prone to developing cancer, and I always think of boxers, if I have a boxer that comes in with a lump or bump, I don't give them a second chance. Like, nope, we need to find out what this is. And who knows why genetically these are just a breed of dog that are so prone to developing cancer. Can you think of any other breeds, cats or dogs, that are just as prone?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There are a lot of dogs that are more prone to cancers. Golden retrievers, German shepherds, prone to certain types of lymphoma or hemangiosarcoma, or tumors of the red blood cell vessels. And boxers particularly, as you said, they get lots of different types of tumors, but also commonly get skin tumors or mast cell tumors that are very dangerous. And interestingly also, a lot of them are breed specific. So you don't really necessarily, you wouldn't necessarily say that some dogs are more prone to all types of cancer except the boxer or maybe a bulldog. And sometimes people will say the Cocker Spaniel. But there are some breeds that are predisposed to certain particular types of cancer. So that somewhat helps a veterinarian when they're dealing with a geriatric pet with very classic symptoms. Sometimes we can tell over the phone when we really need to be concerned.
And one of the things that we can't do over the phone is get a good look and a feel, and that's so important. At least twice a year, get your pet in, have it seen by your veterinarian. Since one of our years, again, is about 7 pet years, a tremendous amount can change, especially in those older pets. We're talking right now with Dr. Diane Levitin. She's a board-certified veterinary internal medicine specialist. We'll be right back after the short break talking about some other issues going on with our senior pets. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pet Life Radio proudly presents DSPN, the Dog Sports and Performance Network. Get ready to unleash the dog sports enthusiast in all of us. From speed drawing and mushing to racing, agility, and competition, this is the place to learn all about the dog sports and activities that you can do with your furry best friend and canine competitor. So get ready for game time. DSPN with your host, Lori Williams. Every week, on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Diane, thanks so much. I mean, you're just giving us some great information about those lumps and bumps. And one of the other things that oftentimes seems to be a problem with older pets are bad teeth. And so many times the clients are saying, doc, it's old. I am not putting this pet under anesthesia to take care of these teeth. What would you say to these folks?
I would say, first of all, I'm so happy you brought that up because, you know what I think the most underdiagnosed problem is in veterinary medicine? For our pets, and this is to me extremely sad, is pain. Pain is the most underdiagnosed problem. We take for granted a lot of how stoic our pets are. When does a cat cry when it's in pain? Maybe if you step on its tail, but most of the time you may never know that your cat is uncomfortable. But if you look in your cat's mouth or your older dog's mouth and their breath is really horrible, it's not okay. It's not because they're old. Look a little closer, look at their gums, look at the tartar or the bacteria and the buildup on their gums, and sometimes you can see broken teeth or you could see the roots of their teeth exposed. And I don't usually tell people to go to the internet, but if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can see great images of really, really horrible teeth. And the reason I'm stressing this is because it's overlooked so often. People sort of say, well, my pet's old, so it has bad breath. It's old, it has really bad teeth, has bad breath, but it's probably in a lot of discomfort because of its teeth. Have you ever
had a Dr. Diane, how can that be? My dog or my cat, it's still eating. If it was in that much pain, wouldn't it stop eating?
I could tell you there are very few things that would stop me from eating, and tooth pain isn't one of them. You know, if I'm hungry, I'm still going to eat, no matter how much my tooth hurts, and I'll find a way to eat. And our pets are the same way. In fact, they're much more stoic than we are. I mean, we are going to cry and scream, and we're going to go straight to the dentist, and they really can't tell us. And sometimes the only way you can really convince somebody is after you've done a dentistry and taken care of those problems, where owners can actually appreciate the difference and how much better their pets feel. And don't forget, sometimes these problems come on really slowly, and even the pets get used to the discomfort. And so you may not even notice very subtle, small changes in your pet's behavior or eating habits, or notice that food may fall out of one side of their mouth, or that they're eating more slowly, or that they prefer to let it get soggy before they eat it. So when things change gradually, also it's very hard to tell. But please don't neglect your pet's mouth. It is one of the most common problems in elderly animals, in any animal, is dental disease. And it's so easy to prevent and so easy to treat. And I just hope that everyone will take a second look at their pet's mouth and not take it for granted that they're old and that's why their mouth smells. That's not true.
I think it's also very important because so many times, you know, you look at the teeth right in front, the little incisors, those baby teeth going, hey, they look pretty good. It's like, no. Yeah, you need to lift up the lip and almost pull that side of the mouth up towards the ear. Don't open the mouth. Keep the mouth closed. Pull the lip up towards the ear and then look at the molars in the back. Those are the guys that really build up a lot of dental disease. And all of a sudden you look back there going, oh, I guess they really are bad. So, yes, right. You're right.
And sometimes it takes your vet to point it out to you. But I will tell you that a lot of people will say to me, well, I don't believe my dog needs a dentistry. I think my vet's just trying to make extra money. Now, I hate to say that sometimes that may be the case, but get them to explain it to you. You should reach a level of comfort and understanding when you're in your veterinarian's office exactly what's going on. And if they can explain it to you, you will feel comfortable knowing that it's important to do. And if you don't feel comfortable, it might even be worth seeking a second opinion, because that is just something. Prevention and keeping the teeth clean and preventing them from getting yucky to begin with is also as important as treating them once they do get pretty crummy.
It's great if you can, as a puppy or a kitten, get them used to brushing their teeth. Your veterinarian can explain how to do this. People say, well, how often do I need to do this? Well, if you talk to the board certified veterinary dentist, they will say you need to do it daily. And in a perfect world, we would. But it's not perfect, so get in there as often as you can. And if you have an older pet who's never gotten used to doing this, there are things that you can do, foods that you can feed that will help. One of the things that you had mentioned, Dr. Levitan, is about cats not showing their signs of pain as well as dogs. But I've had cats in situations where, for instance, it's horrible. They'd been hit by a car, and they come in, and they're purring. And people go, how can it be purring if it has to be in pain? And I've always told people, it's somewhat like if you're doing meditation and you have your om. Well, I think for kitties, their purr kind of takes them to that quiet place and tries to get their little minds off of the pain that they're feeling. So cats,
I think I need to start learning how to purr.
Well, if you start purring, people might think that you're getting a bit senile. Tell us about pets getting senile.
Yeah, so purring for me would probably not be such a good idea, at least not in public. But I am going to try it because it's a good om, right?
But, definitely.
You know, pets do become, it's interesting, there's an article this month in the Journal of American Veterinary Medical Association about changes in Alzheimer's in people's brains, and we find that pets have similar changes over time. Now, pets don't live as long, so we don't get to see those, we don't see those advanced changes, but we do see similar types of senility or changes in our pets' brains and in their behavior. But besides that, you know, as pets age, I'm sure people will think about this now that we're going to talk about it, things like losing their vision or their visual acuity, and also losing the sense of hearing makes them startle easily, perhaps even, you know, because they startle, even bite in a time when they never would have, and they become sometimes arthritic and painful, and because of that, they're a little more ornery, and so the personalities can change as they age, and it's not necessarily a disease, but it could be a symptom of something that's bothering them or something else that's going on. So whether they have a primary senility type of change in their brain, which is not that common, but we do treat it when we can be feel very comfortable that that's what it is. But there are a lot of reasons why their personalities might change. And another very important reason to try to get as much detail as you can when you're explaining to your veterinarian about your senior pet's change in behavior.
One of the things you had also mentioned is, you know, having the pain, and one of the common pains as you and I get older is going to be disc disease. I had the pleasure of visiting you recently, and you took me into a practice that you had been working at, and they had a hyperbaric oxygen chamber, and you were talking about a pet who had had a disc problem, and you'd used hyperbaric oxygen. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Because that, I know, is definitely cutting edge for veterinary medicine.
So excited about this technology, and it's something that was actually discovered even before they knew what oxygen was. But hyperbaric therapy is a method of putting oxygen, 100% oxygen, under pressure. So having a patient in a chamber with oxygen under pressure. Now everyone says, that's very strange, thank you for that. But what that actually does, and first of all, the hyperbaric chamber you may have heard before used for scuba divers.
And the reason is because,
yes, for when they're recovering from the bends, or to help them recover from the bends. And the reason that pressure works, so it's a pressure chamber and we put 100% oxygen in it. And the reason that that works is because most gases, in fact, all gases, will go into solution under pressure. So under enough pressure, gas will become a liquid, just like we have oxygen tanks. Well, they're tanks filled with liquid, and they're stuffed into there, liquid oxygen under pressure. And when we open up the valve and we expose it to one atmosphere or the pressure that we live at, the oxygen turns into gas, and that's how it's delivered. But even nitrogen and oxygen will go into solution when it's put under pressure. And the reason that's so remarkable is because oxygen in solution is like plasma, or like the serum in our blood. So normally red blood cells carry oxygen, but in this case, oxygen under pressure gets carried by the fluid in our body. And so places where red blood cells can't get, for instance, a person that has a stroke, or a cat that has a blood clot, or an animal whose spinal cord is affected by a ruptured disc, like you were mentioning. So the reason that there's damage is because there's so much pressure that oxygen doesn't flow normally to certain tissues. But when you can put them under pressure with 100% oxygen, we can bring oxygen in very, very high concentrations to areas where oxygen would not be able to get. And oxygen has incredible healing properties, and it just really does remarkable things. And in human medicine, it's used very commonly today. And if you live in California, which you are in California, and there are a lot of places around the country that have hyperbaric chambers available for people for many, many reasons. But we have just really re-implemented it in human medicine, and now I think it's extremely important to reintroduce it, or to introduce it into veterinary medicine.
Something else that I think is just absolutely fascinating, you know, people think about radioactivity and it's like, oh, this is really bad. But as cats in particular get older, they oftentimes have a condition known as hyperthyroidism. Their thyroid becomes overactive, the thyroid being a gland they have in their necks, just like people do. And that gland, all of a sudden, people think, oh, my kitty has just found the fountain of youth. It starts to lose weight. It's starting to run around like a little crazy creature. But in actuality, their metabolism goes into hyperactivity. How does this radioactive iodine work?
That's another really exciting advancement. And actually, it's a technology that's used in people as well. But the thyroid, when it overproduces hormone, causes those symptoms that you're talking about, is hyperthyroidism. And we haven't figured out exactly why, but we do know that cats 7 or 8 years or older are very prone to developing this hyperactivity of their thyroid gland. But the thyroid hormone itself is made with iodine. It's one of the few places in our body where iodine is concentrated. So years ago, scientists discovered that if we attach a radionucleotide or a radioactive substance that's relatively safe, that only sort of causes damage in 1 to 2 millimeters around it, if we attach it to iodine and we give it to a person or a cat, it will concentrate in the thyroid gland, and it will destroy the tissue 1 to 2 millimeters around it. And so it turned out to be the perfect solution to treating thyroid, benign thyroid tumors in people and in animals, and prevents the additional production of thyroid hormone. And we're able to do that in animals, and it's extremely successful, very, very easy, and a wonderful advancement.
What are some of the safeguards? Because people might thinking, oh my goodness, I don't want a cat that's going to glow in the dark at home. Can you explain how you make sure that no person is being harmed by this?
Right, exactly. No person was harmed making this video. But the interesting thing is that we are given radionucleotides quite often in diagnostics for people. And the precautions that the government requires are much, much more stringent for animals than they are for people. So in a person, and also they vary by state, and even in New York where I live, they vary by county. So it depends on who governs the radioactive substances used in medicine. But long story short, a person is given more than 10 times the dose that we would give a cat. And the person goes home the same day and is given some instructions like flush the toilet twice after you go for a few days and try not to sleep with young children or children under the or anyone under the age of, I think it's 18 for people. And those precautions are because you are carrying a radioactive substance, and in the remote possibility that you're close, you know, 1 to 2 millimeters away, that radioactive substance can potentially cause damage. The quantities that are used in our kitty cats is so low, and most states have requirements that if they are to go home with you and they are eliminating at home when they have radiation, they teach you how to wear gloves and empty the garbage carefully. But the risk to people is extremely low because our government protects us so well.
You're actually curing this condition versus just treating it with this radioactive
iodine. You're right. So it's one of the few circumstances where we can actually cure it and not have to give medicine every day, which is your other alternative. And you know, it's very interesting that you mentioned also about the radiation, because with national security today, they're very sensitive about radiation. And when a human being goes in for a cardiac stress test, if they're given a radionucleotide, they leave that office radioactive. And my husband actually had one of those heart tests, drove to work, got pulled over by a police officer because they detected high levels of radiation from his car.
Whoa.
We don't go that high with cats. They probably wouldn't pull you over with a cat. But people require notes in New York if they've had that test done. It's very interesting.
Big Brother is watching out for us.
Yeah,
fascinating.
They are.
I guess those people probably shouldn't also fly. Could be a real problem. Well, these things are awesome, and I know one of the things that you love doing, and I've seen you do ultrasounds, and oftentimes people say, why can't you just take an x-ray? And we don't have a lot of time, but if you could just tell us a little bit about what ultrasounds can look for and how they differ from just taking an x-ray of something.
Yeah, that's really something that's dear to my heart. It's my favorite thing to do because we really get answers. X-rays are very helpful, two-dimensional image of black and white of the structures inside the body, but they all overlap each other in an x-ray, and it's very difficult to tell the structure of an organ. And with ultrasound, we can see details. If you think about ultrasounding a baby, you know you can see the baby's heart, and you can see the baby's liver, and you can see the fluid around it. And when we look inside of an animal, we can see those exact same details in a dog or cat, and it helps us really pinpoint abnormalities in a way that x-rays are never going to be capable of doing. Extremely helpful tool for diagnosing many, many disorders, and a lot of times is a second resort, blood tests and physical exam, followed up by ultrasound if we can't find the answer.
And ultrasounds are wonderful because so many times the pet does not need to be sedated, it's not invasive, it doesn't require any anesthesia, and it's kind of like in the old days we'd have to go ahead and do an exploratory surgery. Now, shave the tummy, shave wherever, take a look at it with a little bit of gel on the body, and amazing answers so quickly. It's fantastic.
It's a phenomenal tool. It's just all the things you can do. Even look at tendons and find ailments in horses' legs and people's legs and pets' legs. It's extremely helpful. And cardiac disease, especially heart diseases, can really be unfolded by using an ultrasound machine. So an important tool. And if your veterinarian is stumped and they haven't done an ultrasound, at least ask them if that's something that might be helpful in finding a diagnosis for your geriatric pet.
A lot of practices have them. I know my own practice, we're getting one. But right now, we actually have an ultrasonographer that comes in, a veterinarian, to do the procedures for us. So if a veterinarian is listening to this, or if you're a client and go to your veterinarian going, I don't want to go up the learning curve, or I can't afford it, there are services that will come to them. Or there can be specialty hospitals or teaching hospitals associated with veterinary schools. So there's a lot of ways of getting this done.
And affordable now, too.
Good. I've had the pleasure today of speaking with Dr. Diane Levitan. She is a board-certified veterinary internal specialist who's just given us some great information on how we can keep our pets with those silver little whiskers, keeping as best a quality of life for as long as possible. So the goal of the show has always been to entertain, educate, and to motivate you to be the best pet owner that you can be. And Dr. Levitan has given us some great ideas. Hopefully you will check in again next week and learn a little bit more and hopefully be a bit more motivated. Thank you so much for being with us. Stay tuned next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets. Straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.